I'm David Crow. Thank you for tuning in to episode 179 of my weekly radio show, The Infectious Myth. Email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. That's Crow with an E. Join the discussion and like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at infectiousmyth. Listen Tuesdays at 2 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time here on PRN.fm, or download the MP3 after broadcast with iTunes or other podcast apps. You can listen to any of the last five episodes over the phone by dialing the U.S. number 701-719-0990 and following the instructions. Remember that you'll be responsible for any long-distance charges. I don't know that you're a listener until I hear from you, so send me a message letting me know how you stay in touch with the show and what you like about it, or don't. If you include your mailing address, I'll send you a little thank you gift, which will be one of the bookmarks I make by hand using my own photographs. If you'd like to sponsor this show, please contact me. You can donate via PayPal using the email david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com, or make monthly donations at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. We appreciate all our listeners, but if you want this show to continue to grow and improve, consider paying a small amount for the information that you are gleaning, for the support you get for some of your non-mainstream ideas, and the challenges you get to others. If you would like me to speak at a meeting of an organization you're associated with on just about any of the topics I covered in my shows, I'd love to discuss this with you. I appreciate you commenting and suggesting guests. I appreciate your financial support as well. Thanks for listening and for recommending this show to your friends. And now for some feedback. Ruth Ann Fredenthal, a painter, wrote to me regarding episode 177, where we remembered Michael Ellner. She wrote, "I want to thank you for your excellent program of April the 10th, 2018, a tribute to the great Michael Ellner, which was with Tom DiFernando and Bud Weiss, who I know well, Celia Farber, who I've met, and Joan Shenton, whom I didn't know personally, but certainly know her work. It was a wonderful program and a pleasure to hear all their reminiscences about Michael. It all rang so true, and I'm glad you had the balls to do such a program. In 1989 to 1999, I came to the Heal office after knowing that they had an alternative view on the so-called AIDS epidemic, because my dear friend Stephen Miller, a brilliant entrepreneur, was in trouble with a drug problem starting in 1989 and been given an indeterminate HIV test at a hospital. This is how I first met Michael. He explained in clear, caring words what this really meant, and I was so impressed with him and his attitude that I started coming to the weekly HEAL meetings at the Gay and Lesbian Center and did so for many years. They were remarkable and exciting meetings with many patients and experts, including the great Peter Duisberg, Dr. Stefan Lanka, Luc Montagnier, Robert Root Bernstein, John Lauritsen, and many others, too numerous to list. There was even a meeting with Robert E. Wilner, MD, in November of 1994, who wrote the book Deadly Deception, which I bought, and he autographed for me that night. Perhaps you know that beginning in 1993, he would inject himself with the blood of an HIV-positive patient in front of groups, which he did at HEAL. A few months after the HEAL meeting, he was found dead of a, quote, heart attack. The meetings were just wonderful and thrilling, with sometimes 85 people week after week. I brought several of my positive friends to them, but most could not change their mindset. When I brought my Stephen to a HEAL meeting in 1990, he said to me right away that Michael is a prince. Stephen understood immediately what Michael was doing, appreciated and believed his message, and wanted to support him. He did come to some meetings. He lived in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and some events, but alas, he didn't succeed. Michael, who liked Stephen very much, as they were both fearless and visionaries, even came to Stephen's memorial at Judson Church in March of 1994. There are so many great memories of Michael and HEAL. We had a good time there. And so your program was very much appreciated and enjoyed by me. It reminded me of those good old days when Michael and HEAL were alive and blooming with purpose and vigor. Thanks so much, Ruth. And now let's go to our interview. Brian Schaefer went to jail for pesticides. Well, against pesticides. He was sentenced to 2 days in jail and a $250 fine. Some of the best people in the world have gone to jail. What did he do that was so terrible? Well, basically he requested that the spray truck not spray the area around his house, where there is a small organic garden. They had done that before, but that changed when he started to advocate against pesticides at city council. We'll get into the details of this in our discussion. Brian received a Master of Arts after studying at Chadron State College in Nebraska and Kansas State College. He has started food web gardens locally to raise awareness of toxins in the food supply and also methods to avoid them through agriculture. He hosts training and farm tours to increase the knowledge of nutrition and livelihood skills in his community, which is the city of Ord in Valley County, Nebraska. Welcome to the show, Brian.
All right, thanks.
I hope I got that all right.
That sounds good.
So you say that you were not an expert on chemicals or farming, but a layman who was awakened to a lot of information around 2014. So what woke you up? And then we'll talk about, you know, how you educated yourself.
I started researching the chemicals that were being sprayed after I got back from an internship that I took overseas at Aloha House in Palawan, Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
It was there that I started studying about the microbiology in the soil and how the bacteria populations and the fungus populations have to be there in order for the plants to have the nutrients that it needs. That's where I learned about EM.
EM,
it stands for effective microorganisms.
Oh, okay.
And so being on a farm where they're using EM, they can call these farms EM farms, they can call them EM environments. So it's kind of my first time of actually looking at a system, you know, where the biology is the priority.
My impression, especially, I think America has this worst, is that bacteria are the enemy. Bacteria and viruses and fungus and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
And the idea in the human body or in farming is to create a sterile environment in which you can put in nutrition or fertilizers or whatever it is to produce a healthy person or to produce good food. It's obvious that model is flawed and broken and horribly counterproductive. But that's sort of the idea. The soil is something sterile, you pour in fertilizers and you get out food.
Right, sure.
And why did you go to the Philippines then? I mean, you must have to go to this EM farm.
My dad read Fit for Life, Harvey and Marilyn Diamond, around 1990, 91. And he started changing our diet at home towards I just remember the salads, that we had a lot more of live food in the house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he also had a garden. And we made these fruit drinks every morning, just started changing a little bit of our diet, taking out the refined or the processed meat and red meat and soy, but just a few things. And then later on in my life, I, you know, started eating organic food that was now in the grocery stores, and I had a friend who would see how I was being a hypocrite when free food was around me. I would eat free food thinking, okay, it's fine. And then this friend who's like, hey, wait a minute. I thought you said you wanted to eat organic food.
What do you mean by free food?
Oh, it was like...
Like if somebody brings donuts to work or something?
Yeah, right. Or if there's leftovers, you know, at work, it can be taken home, kind of. Free food.
Right, I understand.
Yeah, so, or at parties or whatever it may be. But then once I had this influence in my life, I started to think, okay, I'm going to actually, it was a roommate, you know, and we both kind of held each other to eating better food.
Right.
And so I met this owner of the farm on my way to work, and, in Vail, Colorado, I was heading to work. I was went out there to sell ski boots for a winter job.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me about a book that he wrote. And so I read his book. It's called Sustainable Agriculture in the Tropics, Keith Mickelson.
Okay.
And it kind of whet my appetite to learn more. And the combination of me changing my diet and me also seeing another way for me to take another step in learning about how to grow healthier food with this opportunity to go as an intern.
Right.
It was like a combination of that. I was like, well, it was almost like my body was like wanting to be healthier, leaning towards that direction. So that's what got me to go to the Philippines. I told my brother and my sister and another friend that I met about it, and we all four went as a group.
Oh, okay.
So it was really neat to be able to go along with a couple of my family members.
So, I mean, it really started as a coincidence, but you were prepped for something like that. Maybe they call it karma or serendipity, yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, or if you're on the road to health, you know, there's little steps that you can take.
Did you say on the road?
Healthier.
Did you say on, yep, the road to hell or the road to health?
No, yeah, to health.
Okay, right. I was going to say.
No, I think it's the highway to hell, isn't it?
That's right. It's the highway to hell. Health is a narrow and winding road with a lot of diversions along the way.
That's right. When we were there, we were introduced on the fourth day. You show up there and you do a three-day intensive training where he gives you hands-on training, but then lots of slides and the history of organic farming. He talks about some biodynamic farming and permaculture. And I really enjoyed the education in the way that he presented things, because it was usually critical towards farming methods. It wasn't just critical towards conventional farming. He was very critical even towards organic farming, to where you felt more of a fervor to go and talk to organic farmers about what they're doing, as opposed to going out and trying to change the big conventional farmers.
What does he think that organic farmers are getting wrong, the general run-of-the-mill organic farmer?
If you are solely organic, which means, well, there's a few checklists. I'm not sure of all the checklists right now, but
right,
you know, there's only a few years that you have to remain from putting any man-made chemicals on your property, mm-hmm, or on the field. There's just a few checklists, but there's no input. There's no requirements for inputs, but then there's also no checks and balances whether what you're producing is actually high quality. You know, high antioxidant, high Brix, you know, there's no standard. It's just, did you do these few things? And then, let me just finish with a little bit of my experience and how I, as you said, became awake,
mm-hmm,
to these things. The fourth day was a bonus day, and it was pretty much a full day of listening to Sally Fallon, who is one of the founders of within the Weston A. Price Foundation.
Okay.
And her talking about good nutrition and what Weston A. Price recorded in his travels of studying indigenous people groups,
mm-hmm,
and their, yes, diets. Yeah. So that was a big mind eye-opening experience for me to be thinking about what is a good diet. And then now I'm at a place where I'm not going to get in debates about the best possible, you know, conservation effort within our farming. Right now, I want to just talk about what a good diet is, or at least be in that conversation, so that our agriculture will start to adjust towards a good diet, you know, towards getting good, wholesome foods into our houses again.
Well, it seems that there's two tracks there, right? Like if you agree that we should be eating more fruits and vegetables, for example, there's still the question of you know, are they coated with pesticides or are they fully organic? And as you say, you know, is the organic optimized for the nutrition, or is it optimized like industrial agriculture for the size and look of the food, as opposed to the healthiness and nutritional content?
That's right. One of the little terms that I got was at the farm was work for quality in your produce, and then the profits will follow, because really there's no competition for a superior product. If you can work for quality, then the profits will end up, you know, coming later.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what my banner would be, you know, here in my garden. And that's what I wrote in our local newspaper once I found out what they were spraying on our garden in our town was, you know, this is my effort to not just raise awareness about it, but also to grow a high-quality garden. Because once I learned a little bit more about these chemicals, I started to see how they were destroying the life in the soil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came back, and I do compost teas. We built a double vortex brewer, not to raise our bench or anything, but one side goes to the right, and then one side goes to the left. There are two bowls that is moved with air.
Okay.
And we've got a worm farm where we can top harvest the worm beds to get their vermicast off the top.
All right.
It's then brewed, so we're stripping the microorganisms out of that compost.
Right.
And then applying it to our garden.
You actually apply like a slurry of microorganisms to the soil to try to increase the content?
That's right. Foliar sprays as well, and then soil drenches as well. So I'm out there putting beneficial microorganisms in our soil,
mm-hmm.
and I see the spray truck driving by. You know, most people think, you know, it's okay. This is something that happens all the time, right? We've had this since we were young kids. You can drive your bike around and in the fumes, and everything's fine, you know, and you're made fun of if you, you know, run home away from it or something.
Yes.
But, you know, it's just a normal thing. But I had to go out there. I felt like I needed to. I just was like, you know, what's going on? They're spraying our town. And so I had to stop the truck. This was years before I was arrested. But I stopped the truck and just asked them, what is this stuff? And that's when I started to research it. It was probably in 2015.
You called it Biomist 3 plus 15.
Yep. It's a registered trademark. It's a consortium of chemicals.
Okay, and what? It's sprayed for mosquitoes.
That's right. It's designed to paralyze the adult mosquitoes to death.
Right. It's a nerve poison, like a lot of pesticides.
Yes. Yep.
And it's obviously, you say it's a mixture of different active chemicals. And then, of course, we've got the inert ingredients. So what are some of the active chemicals in Biomist, and what are your concerns with those?
There's one synergist within there. It's this that causes all the other ingredients to be more toxic.
Right.
I researched this stuff, and I feel like it's open information. Anyone can look on the internet and find out what these chemicals are. And I feel like, it almost doesn't even do a good job for me to go around even talking about it, because people are so entrenched into their thinking that for some reason we need this stuff. We need to spray it.
Mm-hmm. Bad are mosquitoes? Does anybody know how bad mosquitoes would be if they stopped spraying?
Right, that's a good question.
It's been so many years that people have been spraying for mosquitoes that people have forgotten what it was like before mosquitoes.
Right, and if they think, if we stop spraying, it'll be even worse.
Right.
From my understanding, it's gonna actually possibly, if we can have good management of our low wetland areas, places that hold water, that breed mosquitoes, if we can have that, you know, if we can focus some of a little bit more of our energy on getting rid of the standing water in our town, making sure all the water is moving, and if we do have to make a little bit of a dam with some mosquito fish that eat the mosquito larvae, let's do stuff like that.
And what about birds? Because, birds are probably the, maybe not the most vulnerable, but they're some of the most vulnerable animals because of
how... The birds are dying all over, but they blame it on West Nile just like they do the humans.
Right.
And the people who get encephalitis and neural meningitis, like yours truly. This is Brian's brother, who went to the Philippines as well. I'm just sitting here, having my breakfast and overheard. They're killing the mosquitoes. It's killing the people. I've got the West Nile virus. Wait a second. I did my research. It's not West Nile. It's permethrin poison to the T.
Yes, yes.
Well, I didn't get a rash. I didn't get it bitten by a mosquito, you know? It's permethrin poisoning to the T. It's the same thing with Lyme's disease. They're covering it up with this Lyme's disease, so they put it on a tick. Who's the real culprit? Oh, it's the tick. Ah, oh, shit. Now we can sell you our medicines. Here, I think we can give you this really expensive one. This will help.
Yeah, no, you're right. I've studied West Nile pretty intensively, and it's pretty clear that it was not the virus. It was just a CDC scare that started in New York in a summer when it was heavily polluted because of the hot weather.
Absolutely. And then they're bringing all these chemicals in. They're trucking them in and subsidizing them in, and then they're going to have the guys... For the people who are going to be sick, they're going to be needing medicine real quick. I mean, it happens right after they spray. People are running in. I got West Nile. I got this. I got neural encephalitis. And I've had a 107 to 108, you know, temperature for 2 weeks straight. Nothing helps.
I mean, it's amazing that the symptoms of pesticide poisoning are very similar to the flu, like stomach upset, things like that, which is not surprising because it probably screws up your intestinal flora. But when people have the flu, they just assume that it's a virus. They would never think that it's something on their food, that it's a pharmaceutical that they've taken, it's the pesticides in the air around them, especially if they live in an agricultural area or a place where they spray for mosquitoes.
Sure. I found the chemical name that they mix with it, the Synergist.
Yep.
It's the piperonyl butoxide, or PBO. I don't know much about it. I just, you know, you can just read about it online. It depends on what you read, but you can learn a lot about what it is and what people are saying about it.
Right. I mean, what I was saying about... birds is that agriculture has destroyed bird populations, you know, through clearing trees, through draining wetlands, things like that. And birds are extremely good at eating insects. I mean, a lot of birds live off insects, things like swallows and so many other birds. Yep. And so healthy bird populations are obviously important. And I mean, healthy bird populations have a lot of other benefits to society. They make people feel more connected with nature if they see birds flying around all the time, as opposed to a sterile sky.
And even bat houses, you know, making a bat house for every house along these creeks.
Right, and bats are kind of like a vacuum cleaner for bugs.
Sure. Oh yeah.
At night. So you basically became awakened, or I guess in the newer lingo, you became woke to the issues with pesticides and to the benefits of not just organic agriculture, but agriculture that's focused on the nutritional quantity of food. And you obviously wanted to tell people about this, but you had this issue with the spraying affecting your garden. And is your garden a commercial outfit or a nonprofit, or like is it just an experiment?
Well, I call it a project. I came back working on 10 beds that I'd like to use those 10 beds for commercial.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I'm just supplying food for my family and neighbors and friends.
Right, right.
And then eventually grow into creating some sort of a value-added processing with it. We make sauerkraut.
Mm-hmm.
So we ferment our vegetables, and yeah, so we're trying to supply sort of that Weston A. Price chapter kind of mentality of how can we be a part in our larger community with creating high quality food for that good diet that we need for optimal health. And so I'm wanting to be kind of a liaison or someone in the middle that can resource all of these food products and then just give people phone numbers on the and go on farm tours and show people where we can start getting the food from.
Is there some organic agricultural culture in your part of Nebraska?
Yeah, there's a few farms.
Mm-hmm.
They're still doing grass-fed, grass-finished grazing. And so there's a few farms out there, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, change is starting, even in a very conservative part of America.
Yeah. Well, I call up and I ask one of the farms, pretty much the only one that I have available, and they say, well, we don't have produce, or we don't have this stuff this year, or this time of year, and one of the reasons was because of lack of interest. I was just like, huh, that's an interesting thing to say. Because of lack of interest, we don't have food.
Right.
And I'm just like, wait a minute, I'm interested. Can one person get food right now?
Yes.
But, yeah, it's kind of, so it's still, I don't know if I want to call it a food desert. I don't know if that's a term that I could use, since there is still a grocery store
right
around here. But at the same time, I still want to be in the conversation of where's the food at? How can we start, dividing up a little bit of our time and effort to supply our local communities with food, and then have a conversation with what it means to have farm-generated fertility, so that we can start, paying a little less for these chemicals in our day-to-day practices on the farms. We can start, creating
right
compost.
I mean, I would
machines and the fossil fuel to build the compost to
right
build the topsoil. Yeah,
I would guess that most people would think that organic agriculture is really nice, but
yeah,
it's going to be more expensive because of the loss of products to pests. But there's actually a lot of inputs in industrial farming that you don't need, like obviously pesticides and artificial fertilizers. And if you consider the more nutrient-rich quality of the food, it's quite likely that organic farms are more profitable or more productive, like in terms of producing nutrition in terms of, as opposed to just producing the quantity of food. But is there nobody else apart from your family who's interested, or is word kind of getting out? And do you think that there are more people thinking about these issues now in your area because of your lobbying?
A good question. I'd like to hear what people are talking about a little bit more. All I hear are, just rumors. I really don't know what people are thinking.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be nice to go door to door and ask them, do you know what you're being sprayed with, and do you care? And did you know that we can actually voice our opinion to our representatives so that...
It is nominally a democracy, right? Like these people who are ordering the spraying were elected.
Right.
So let's go back to the spraying. I mean, even though it's an insecticide and not a herbicide, obviously that's a problem for anybody who's trying to farm organically, because it's not organic if you're getting spray drift or if you're being directly sprayed.
Right.
And you said at one point they respected this and they agreed not to spray your your little part of the city of Ord?
Our neighbor talked to the spray truck driver, and they were not spraying on our property line.
Mm-hmm.
Once I sent the letter, that's when they started spraying again.
So what did you say in the letter that got everybody upset?
I think it was just that maybe it was a question, why are we continuing to spray a known toxic chemical when there are natural alternatives?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that was taken as
a rhetorical question.
A rhetorical question. And then I asked for a response, and I didn't get a response. And the response that I did get was them spraying that property line. And so I felt like, you know, it was almost as if I felt like they were taunting me.
Right. Like if you keep quiet, we'll be nice to you. But if you try to make change, we will assert our power.
Sure. Right. Yeah, so not a very healthy discourse for some reason between me and the city, even though I started off by just talking with the city superintendent of utilities.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of like on his way to work. We met each other. I was riding my bike. He got out of his vehicle. I got to the city offices right at the same time, and it was a beautiful spring day. It was like 2015, and I was like, this is a perfect time for me to go talk with him and let him know, you know, a little bit about what I experienced overseas, you know, with talking about the microorganisms and what I've been focused on and in my gardening project. And one of the first things he said was, Brian, you're not going to beat the chemical industry. And it was interesting because I didn't understand where that comment came from in his mind, because that was not my intention, you know. And it was just kind of an interesting picture for him to paint of me. And that's kind of we've got kind of a running history with this man. He was our neighbor. Just little things happened, like a cat that we thought was ours died. He thought it was his. Somehow he blamed us for the death of that cat.
Okay. And then, small and then, town politics.
Yeah, small little things like that.
Yes.
And then one day the property behind our house was sold to him for $1, unbeknownst to us, where my dad was told that he could use that property. It was just within the right of everyone could have access to that ditch. My dad was gardening it. One day, the city employees were throwing the tomato cages over the fence, and my mom calls my dad and says, what's going on? The city's out here throwing your garden stuff over the fence. And it turns out our neighbor was wanting to build a garage right on top of my dad's garden, which was also right in the view of our sunset. And it became this, mm-hmm. Hey, could you please move this building behind your house instead of our house? And
mm-hmm.
No, I'm not going to do that. And used the city equipment to build a little bit of a embankment. And that's when my dad went to the city council to say, hey, this is what's going on. And since he wasn't really from around this town, didn't know the personal politics going on here, he stuck his head out, and then now, you know, that he became the, the scapegoat or the bad, you know, in person in town, or the asshole, you know, mentality of, and then it just became this way to where, oh, that's just a guy who doesn't fit in. And
it seems to me that this is what happens when most people assume they live in a democracy, so they opt out and they keep voting for the same people. And what you end up with is a small clique that get all the benefits of the government, which most people don't understand, but there's right. significant financial benefits. And sometimes those things are corrupt. You know, things change hands. I mean, the city is probably paying a lot of money for pesticides and maybe for fertilizers and herbicides and things like that as well. So there's a significant connection to the agricultural industry, and who knows if there's some money changing hands to keep that going. Certainly if the city decided to stop spraying, there would be real pushback from the agricultural industry, the chemical industry, because they don't want to see alternatives. They don't want to see cities saying, look, we weaned ourselves off chemicals and life's good. We're not overrun with mosquitoes and dandelions. Right. I think another factor, I'm just guessing at what's going on, is that the people who run these organizations, you know, they know how to order chemicals and they know how to spray them and stuff like that. But if you went to a more creative system where, you know, you're working on your wetlands and you're trying to encourage birds and bats coming back as alternatives, what knowledge would they have that was beneficial? They would basically put themselves out of a job because they don't know that much. They certainly don't know anything about alternatives. And I think that fear is at the basis of a lot of their resistance. It's like, you know, we've been spraying, you know, for 50 years, we've been spraying chemicals, and that's what I know. And now you're talking about things I don't understand. And if somebody's going to do it, it's not going to be me. But I'm quite comfortable with my salary and, my comfortable position. You're threatening a lot, actually.
Yep, that's right. To continue on with the little bit of the story, that my sister and I set up an official meeting the next year. It was like 2016. We set up a meeting and wanted to hear everything that they had, all the information they had on the spraying. And so we were there with the city clerk and the city utilities superintendent. Had an official meeting. On that meeting, they gave me a partial document of the chemical breakdown of what biomist is.
Right.
It had a piece of paper that blocked off the environmental hazard and the first aid, as if it was photocopied off.
Right.
And I went back. Well, I asked him, is this it? Is this all? And he's like, yeah, this is it.
and they'd actually doctored it to remove parts that might not be so favorable.
Right. The part that talked about how it's highly toxic to bees and extremely toxic to all aquatic life.
Yeah, we didn't talk about bees yet, but of course they're really important to the health of the environment.
Right. I thought maybe just telling people what's on the label would be enough for us to say, okay, now let's take a look at this stuff and a serious look, you know, in an agricultural community. You'd think, you know, just talking about what those two things that says it on the label, you know, it's highly toxic to bees, highly toxic to aquatic life and invertebrates. Maybe that'll be enough to get people to get concerned, you know, to have a conversation about this stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I thought, you know, I'll just mention a few things. I'm not going to try to change the whole chemical industry. I'm just going to actually start a conversation with people to think, is this going to add up to something beneficial for our environment and beneficial for our children in the end? You know, that's, I'm just wanting to be the voice of reason here as opposed to a protester or whatever else they want to paint me as.
Yeah, I mean, they basically want to get rid of you, so whatever tactic they have to use, that you're crazy, you're unrealistic, you're overly idealistic, whatever, they'll do it. And of course, they'll push harder as if you get any traction. So talk about how you ended up getting arrested. The spray truck comes around your neighborhood and it's going to spray your area, which it used not to do. So what happened?
We got back from the lake and I was just about ready to have a campfire out front at the garden, and I hear the spray truck going. And my brother Michael's home, and I'm just thinking, they're going to come around and spray this during our barbecue, and I'm just going to go over there and see what their mode of operation is. So I took my camera and took off on my bike, drove through the mist, the fog, on my way, and I've been sprayed with it before. I had my window down once when the pickup passed me, and it coats your mouth. It gives you kind of this coating. They're driving now on private property, this private drive that borders, or that is on the property line of my dad's property here and the neighbors. And now they're spraying when both of us have asked them not to. So they come around the horseshoe towards the city road, and that's now right in front of the city utility superintendent's house. So it's, in my understanding, this is a perfect place for us to have this conversation, because the whole city council at this time, I felt like, didn't have to be involved. I needed to talk to the spray truck drivers and their supervisor, which was the utilities superintendent.
Right.
So first of all, I did not stand in front of the vehicle demanding them to stop. I was in the near center of the road, waving them over. They pulled up to me, rolled down the window, voluntarily stopped and rolled down the window. And that's when I start telling them, you know, did you guys know we have an organic, beyond organic farm over here? This stuff is, you know, destroying what we're working for here. And his response was, well, we have to spray. And so at that point, I'm like, wait a minute, you don't have to spray, you know. And then they, for some reason, we get into the conversation, well, let's get Paul out here, and because if he's your guys' supervisor, then I need to talk to him. So they call him, and he comes out yelling, what's going on here? You got to get out of here, Brian. You need to go home, you know, just all aggressive. And I'm just like, wait a minute, you know, trying to just have a conversation. But he's already been tipped, or he's already anticipated this to happen. I found out later he told the chief of police that there's probably going to be an issue with the Schaefers and the spray truck this week.
Right.
It was this week. Same week.
Right, and so this was a setup. If they go spray your property, you're probably going to get mad, and then
yep.
They can deal with
so
it.
So he was stalling a little bit, waiting maybe for my dad to show up, because at least that's just what I think. And we had a conversation there for a while, and my GoPro camera shut off, and he ends up telling me all these things about my character, marring my character during that time. You used to be a good kid, Brian, before you came back home, you know, and just little comments like that, making it really personal as opposed to a public thing. And then he calls the police, and I'm like, okay, that's great. I talked to the police officer before. I knew this police officer. He's up creek from us, and there's a drainage creek that runs through town.
Right.
All the drainage goes through our property, then into the river. So I feel like my responsibility to have a conversation with some of these gardeners who are up creek from us, and he was one of them. And so he knew the whole story. I gave him the letter that I sent to the city council, just kind of shared what my heart was about this, you know, and what our conversation could be like in a healthy manner, you know. had a good conversation with him. So when he shows up, I'm like, all right, Paul. I wave him over. And when the other Paul, the city utility superintendent, looks at him, he says, take him away. You know, just to get in there and say, this is a criminal that needs to be taken to jail.
Right.
As opposed to, this is a small town, you know, less than 3,000 people. We all know each other. We can have a conversation. But no, not tonight. Take him away. And so he comes up to me, and I'm still on my bike, you know, and kind of like just standing with my bike. And he says, you need to move away from the vehicle. I'm going to arrest you. And I'm like, now, I wanted to undergo a little bit of an interview. I wanted to let him know what's happening here. They're spraying on private property. And so at that point, I have to be honest, I did not listen to the police officer and move away from the vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when he grabs me and...
Well, I mean, if you weren't blocking the vehicle's path, then, you know, I mean, I'm not going to try to pretend I'm a lawyer, but I just wonder on what basis can they tell you to get away from a vehicle that would be perfectly capable of moving away from you.
Yep.
If it was. If you were standing in front of it, that would maybe be different.
Right. That was what we were talking about and questioning the police officer during the trial. But his answer was, well, we were informed that there could be a problem with the Schaefers that week. So when I showed up, that was, you know, that was already in his mind that I was somehow, you know, protesting or something. So he just filled in the blanks based upon previous information that he was given.
It's a well-oiled machine that's operating for its own benefit. It doesn't sound like it's operating for the wider benefit of the people of Ord. But if the people of Ord are asleep and they let it go and they don't mind, if there are illnesses associated with the pesticides and poor nutrition and things like that, then it's going to take a while to change those attitudes.
Well, then it's unfortunate. I've got a nephew and nieces in this town, you know, and young kids. The nephew's the oldest one is a second grader, and three nieces younger than him.
Well, let's turn the conversation to what you're going to do about it in the future. I mean, it sounds like you've got a neighbor who doesn't want spraying. You've got relatives in town. I mean, it seems like there are some people in this town who would support some steps towards perhaps reducing spraying, just doing it on public areas to start with, and, you know, monitoring the mosquitoes to see, are things getting worse, or when we do less spraying, are things okay?
Yep.
And are there some environmental improvements that can be made to the area that would, you know, like you said, bat houses or maybe bird houses that could reduce things? So tell me what are your thoughts about the future?
Oh, man.
I should have warned you about this question.
No, that's fine. Let's see.
I mean, maybe what you need to do is to sit down with some of the people you've mentioned, your brother, your sister, and others, and come up with a plan, because it's not going to be overnight that you're going to change the city of Ord. It's a well-ordered city, if I can use a pun, and it's going to keep doing the same thing every year unless there is a disruption.
Well, the more I dig into it, the more I get petrified of fear, in the sense, because I think that's the way that it's set up. That everything you read, even the things on the No Spray Coalition in New York website, all the conspiracy behind it all, and, you know, even in this small town, experiencing what it has done to our own relationship with our neighbor, you know, I just make the point that it's not good for us socially, even if, you know, just because of the, you know, the mentality of us thinking, okay, that we're okay with these chemicals is just unhealthy. And then having everyone fighting each other, it's like it's causing almost like civil dispute, you know.
Have you thought about running? Have you thought about running for city council?
I've considered those options.
Because I mean, you need to get to a place where you can have conversations and start to change the direction. And I don't know how many people are in your city council, but you know, one person's not going to overnight stop spraying. But all of a sudden, a conversation is happening in a place. And you know, as a city councilor, you can probably arrange a meeting, and you might find that there is actually more people in your town who support these ideas. There might be a fair number of people who are tired of the old boys club that's running your city.
Yep, there's a large city, an hour and a half away from here, Kearney. You call him, the city superintendent there, and he's like, "No, we're concerned about this." What the sprays are doing to the people.
Right.
We're not going to spray. And they've got a large river going through that city. So
interesting.
Yeah, so you get one perspective, and then you get complete opposite perspective from somebody else.
Well, I mean, the times are changing. And, you know, I think people are pretty comfortable. And when people are comfortable and they know that there's problems they're ignoring, they get pretty upset when somebody points that out to them. I mean, I think that's why your superintendent is so upset, because I would guess that's not a very creative person and not a person who's at all educated about what the alternatives might be and how to manage them. If they really thought about it, they would realize that, you know, they're a manager. They could manage putting in bat boxes. They could manage doing something with the wetlands. They could manage things differently if they really wanted to, but then they'd have to think about their job instead of just going to work and doing the same thing they did yesterday.
Well, to answer your question, I was thinking one of the things I want to do, and when I learned about EM1 was the product that the farm used. We use it here.
What kind of a product is it? It's a microorganism.
It's a microbial inoculant.
Okay.
Soil
mm-hmm.
conditioner. As it can be called, Terraganix here in the States offers the product.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of Japan, Okinawa, Japan. It was created by a ex-chemical guy, Dr. Higa, Terra Higa.
Okay.
And I would love to go to the city council and not talk about anything negative, you know, not bring up even the spraying, but just talk to them about EM and the clay mud balls that you could make out of the microbes. You mix into a bran, mix some clay, a little bit of molasses, and then you can use these as some sort of a remediator to mitigate some of these sludge areas, or you can toss them into polluted streams or into lagoons. And I just wanted, I think that was one of the things that I'd like to do that could just start getting the ball rolling in a different direction other than just, you know, butting heads with them.
Well, I think before you, I mean, you've got to change minds and hearts, right? You got to get people saying, yeah, you know, these chemicals are probably not good for us, and we should look at alternatives. And you don't sound like you're the kind of guy is like burn everything down and start over again. You're looking for a wedge where you can start to make change, as opposed to, you know, blow it all down and start over again.
Right. No, I'm not an advocate of easy solutions, easy solutions.
Yes.
I've been influenced by that Joel Salatin from Polyface Farms, and some of his talks are really inspiring, and I think he's wise in his farming methods.
Yes. Well, we are running out of time.
Sure.
So I'm going to give you a last word on this issue.
Okay. Well, when you're considering, if you guys are out there and you've got spraying going on in your city, just learn a little bit about what they're spraying, and then consider whether you can do anything about it. And I believe one of the main things we can do is talk to our ward representative. One of the ideas that I came up with was I took a picture of my garden or my lawn, and I printed it off, and I just gave it to a few gardeners in town, and I put my letter to the city council on the back of it, and I said, consider sending a picture of your lawn or your garden to the city clerk and expressing your desire to be pesticide-free in 2018. And I feel like just talking to a few gardeners around town that might be able to do something like that could just start a little bit of an awareness group of,
right.
And plus, I'm an advocate of connecting people, you know, even if they are of the opposite mentality in our methodologies or in our philosophies and religion, I still think we are better as a whole, as a group, than we are as individuals. And so we need to listen to each other. We need to be able to share, because, you know, I just think we need to have an open conversation, be able to talk about these things and talk about them and debate them as well in healthy manners, instead of remaining silent and...
Or calling the police.
When
you're in danger of having a conversation.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, we really need to wrap this up.
Sure.
So I would just like to thank you for sharing your experiences and your thoughts about food and agriculture and chemicals and all of those different things. And maybe in a while things will have changed in Ord, and you can get back to me and we can talk about that as well.
That'd be awesome. That'd be great. Thanks, David.
Okay. Goodbye then.
Yep. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to episode 179 of The Infectious Myth. If you have a comment, question, or suggestion for a future guest, please email me at david.crow@theinfectiousmyth.com. Like us at facebook.com/theinfectiousmyth. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Infectious Myth. Commit to monthly donations of any amount at patreon.com/infectiousmyth. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.